Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
The fact is, it's a show that I never thought that I would be doing. Even saying it right now feels completely surreal to me. I cannot believe that Kobe Bryant is gone. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense at all. It doesn't add up. It does not compute. It does not line up that Kobe Bryant died yesterday in a helicopter crash in Calabasas. It doesn't make sense that in a moment, a helicopter went down and taking with it John Altobelli, Carrie Altobelli, Alyssa Altobelli, Kobe Bryant, Gianna Bryant, Sarah Chester, Peyton Chester, Christina Mauser, Era Zoe Aubin. According to reports, there was poor visibility and that the helicopter was climbing to go above a layer of clouds when it crashed shortly after 10 a.m. When I first saw the tweet from TMZ, I thought, it's a hoax. I thought they had been hacked. It has to be a hoax. It was so bizarre that when you went to their timeline, 1 minute after the Kobe tweet, there was a tweet from TMZ about the 20th anniversary of a Grammys photo shoot involving the Goo Goo Dolls and Britney Spears. So it had to be a hoax, right? But as time passed, it was clear that it wasn't. It reminds me of when Pat Tillman died. Pat Tillman had enlisted. And when you do that, anything can happen. You know the risks. But I never thought that Pat would not come home. The idea that he would not come home was impossible for me to comprehend. I never thought that Pat Tillman would die. Just like I never thought that Kobe Bryant would not be here. I never thought that I would be doing a show where I was talking about the passing of Kobe Bryant. Like, obviously, I know that Kobe Bryant was a human being. The only thing guaranteed as a human is that you will perish. You will die. We all will. But I never actually thought about Kobe dying. I certainly never thought it would happen on a random Sunday morning in January. I mean, the shock of it is just unbelievable. It's unfathomable to me. It's even more surreal that it happened in Calabasas, where I grew up, a place that I know so well, and right near a road that I used to go up and down every day to go to middle school. I mean, none of it makes sense. The cliche is that it feels like a really bad dream, but that's exactly how this feels, like the worst nightmare imaginable. Because there are bits and pieces of reality, but again, the whole thing just does not add up. Like so many things, like so many others, I'm having trouble processing it. I'm having trouble getting my head around it. And then there are moments where the shock starts to wear off, and then the horrible sadness begins to sink in. And the whole thing is just so horrific. Horrific for Kobe's wife, Vanessa, and their daughters. Awful, awful for the friends and the family of the Altobellis, for Christina Mauser's husband and family, for the friends and family of Sarah and Peyton Chester, and the friends of the family of Era Zibayan. So here's what I want to do today. We did reschedule a couple of guests who were supposed to be on with us, and we've moved them. Woj will be here in the second hour. Rudy Gobert was scheduled to be in the second hour as well. And if he's feeling up to it, we'll talk about Kobe and we'll talk about the season he's having. Chris McGee will also be on later in the show to talk about his memories of Kobe. And I want to talk about Kobe, the impact of everything that happened, his connection to this program. And I want to open it up to you on the phones and on Twitter and on email. If you want to call in and talk about this and grieve, share your memories, whatever you want to do, I'm here for it. If you'd rather email, because that feels easier, go ahead and do that. Because this one really hurts. And if you aren't from LA, if you're not from LA and you're not a Laker fan, it might seem strange that people are this emotionally connected and attached to one athlete. And I understand that too. I've seen this before when something tragic happens to a celebrity. And to be really honest, there is a small part of me in the back of my mind where I would think, how are you that connected? You don't know that person. You've never met that person. But now that I'm in Los Angeles and I see this, I do understand. in a way better than I ever did in the past. Because even if you didn't know him, or you were not a Laker fan, or you're not in this town, this city had an extremely unique relationship with that person. And that person had an extremely unique relationship with this city. It was unlike anything else. There have been other amazing athletes who have played here, other icons who have played here, but none of them were embraced by this city as Kobe. None of them embraced the city the way he did. And it wasn't just about the championships or the MVP trophies or the All-Star game appearances. I mean, given the relationship between Kobe and LA, you would have thought that he had grown up here, not on the East Coast. I could spend the entire show breaking down his relationship with this city and why he was such an enormous part of it, why he was a lot of people's favorite Laker ever. I could do that for the next 3 hours, and I still couldn't even hit the tip of the iceberg. There was just a connection between Kobe and LA that really cannot be described. It can only be felt. But if that's something you want to call in about and you want to explain why you personally felt so connected to him, go ahead and do that. And yes, I knew Kobe a little bit. I'm not going to sit here and say that we were best friends, but he would hit me up sometimes out of the blue. And we'd go to Javier's, and I'd see him around this town. We live in the same area. There's a personal connection to this that does make it harder. It hits a lot closer to home, because he was very visible in this community. He had a production company that's not far from where I'm broadcasting from. He lived not far from where I live. I can't say how many people would say to me, I saw Kobe. I saw Kobe. I saw Kobe driving. I saw Kobe at his daughter's game. I saw Kobe at Starbucks. I saw Kobe. He was very visible. So the whole thing, again, is just so weird and surreal and shocking. And yes, I understand that Kobe was not for everybody. He knew that. He liked that. But he was for Los Angeles. You might not have liked his intensity. You might not have appreciated his drive, his obsession. He knew that too. He liked that. He didn't care if you rooted for him or not. He was okay with that. In fact, he was more than okay with that. On the court, in the gym, in the weight room, he was fierce. His ferocity was the stuff of legend. A ferocity that you never, ever see. A drive to constantly get better. Relentlessly looking to improve upon everything. As he once told Jackie McMullen, quote, I could never understand why winning wasn't the most important thing to everyone. Why are you here then? End quote. And of course, that was the force that drove him. That was the chip. Winning. Getting better. Being better. Beating everybody, dominating everybody. Again, I could spend the next 3 hours or the next week breaking down why this is so heartbreaking. And it would not do it justice either, because there are so many heartbreaking moments about this. Starting with the fact that Kobe was only getting started. I mean, it seems crazy to say that after nearly 2 decades in the NBA, Kobe Bryant was just getting started, but he was. He was just 41. He was not a guy who was searching for something to do in retirement, kicking around aimlessly, not knowing what to do when he woke up in the morning. He always knew what to do. He had a plan. He was working it. He was relentless in that as well. And he was taking the same approach to life after basketball that he had taken to his life in basketball. He had already won an Academy Award. How crazy is that? An MVP and an Oscar. Who knows what he was going to do next? Who knows what we all missed out on and will never see? And here's the even worse part. He was just getting started in his professional life. But he was just getting started in his personal life. Seeing him having the time to be a father and reveling in that was so cool. It was so inspirational. Just like now seeing the videos of Kobe with Gianna are so painful. It was so clear how crazy he was about her, how much he adored her. Like this clip from Jimmy Kimmel.
Do you think your daughter might want to play in the WNBA?
She does for sure.
She does?
I don't, I mean, this kid, man.
Wouldn't like, that be great?
Dude, man, I'm telling you. The best thing that happens is when we go out and fans will come up to me and she'll be standing next to me and they'll be like, hey, you gotta have a boy. UNV gotta have a boy, man. You have somebody carry on the tradition, the legacy. She's like, oi, I got this. You know, boy, for that, I got this. Like, that's right. Yes, you do. You got this.
So I want to wrap this moment up, or this segment up, in a moment. And I'm not going to close with a grand pronouncement about life and death, or tell you to hug your loved ones, or call somebody you have not spoken to in a long time. But if you're feeling moved to do any of that, then do that. But you already know it. We all know it. This thing can be over in a moment, in a heartbeat. There is an awful, awful truth to all of this. Even the people who we never think are going to die will. Even your heroes die. It can end in a moment on a random Sunday morning in January. Hey, sports fans, listen up. I've got a daily sports podcast that I want to tell you about. One that you want to check out from Wondery and The Athletic. It's called The Lead. Every weekday morning, The Lead brings you a deep dive into the biggest sports stories of the day from The Athletic's all-star team of local and national sports reporters. Stories like, where did the Niners' new star running back Raheem Mostert come from? Or what can Zion do for the Pelicans? So if you're looking for the full story behind last night's scores and today's hot takes, make sure you subscribe to The Lead from Wondery and The Athletic. Check it out. Adrian Wojnarowski is my guest. Woj, it is good to have you on the show. How are you?
Jim, I'm well. How are you?
Same, Adrian. You know, it's a conversation that I never thought that you and I would be having ever. I never thought that you and I would be talking about Kobe being gone. How are you doing today, and how are you processing this terrible news?
Yeah, I think, like everyone else, just, shock and, shock and obviously great sadness, not only for Kobe, but his daughter and the seven others who were on the helicopter, and then obviously all the family and friends and people who are impacted by this. This is a hard one.
You know, I think, Adrian, for those who never spent any time around Kobe, and that's the majority of people, it's kind of hard to really understand what it is we're talking about here, and especially if you're outside of L.A. or you're not a Laker fan. You did spend a lot of time with Kobe over the years. How would you describe him as a person?
Well, complex, Jim, in a lot of ways. There was a ferocity to him, a determination unlike anyone I've ever come across in any walk of life. I mean, Kobe was obsessive in a lot of elements of his life, but certainly his professional life and basketball and what he wanted out of, himself, his teammates, his coaches. He was extremely demanding of everybody around him, whether that was ownership, management, the people who covered him. he was a guy of extremes. And I think at times it helped make him the best player in the world for, certainly a significant period of time. And I think it also led to problems that came about in his life too. There was no question, Kobe lived to extremes, but I do think that was tempered later in life. In these last several years, I do think his girls, his children, gave him something in his life that I thought he and I think he thought that he really needed.
Adrian Wojnarowski is joining us. I could not agree with you more. In fact, when he retired, he talked about the fact that he had been with the Lakers for more than half his life. And when you consider the impact he had, when did you first start writing about Kobe and talking about Kobe? And then, Woj, even in retirement, how much did you continue to think about, write about, and connect with him?
Well, I remember the first time I saw him play. It was in Sullivan Arena in Fresno, California. I was working at the Fresno Bee, and the Lakers had, I think it was their first preseason game. Maybe they played one in Hawaii, but it was certainly the first or second. And I remember sitting courtside, and Kobe was 17. And I remember Del Harris screaming at him, the Laker coach, stop dribbling the ball. You're not in high school anymore. Stop dribbling. And I remember that first night. And then I felt like I started to get to know Kobe well in 2008 at the Olympics in Beijing. spending the month with him there, and felt like that started to break an ice, and I got to know him better. And then really from 08 on, built a really good working relationship with him through the two championships with the Pau Gasol team, and then through the end. And I think I connected with him less here in the last few years, and I got the sense others did too. He was so, his world was built around his daughters and his family, and while he had a lot of really remarkable media projects that he was involved with, the podcast and the children's books, and that took up a lot of his time. I was just talking to Rob Pelinka about this, a few weeks ago, and he was just telling me about Kobe coaching Gigi and how much he loved it, and how much fun he was having, and that certainly made all of yesterday and today, that much more difficult to process.
Adrian Wojnarowski is joining us. Woj, help me with this, because there have been plenty of legends who have played for the Lakers, but nobody really had the connection with Laker fans that Kobe did. How would you describe that connection, and why was it so unique?
Yeah, impenetrable. And I think there won't be another Kobe for those fans. They watched him grow up. I mean, he came in at 17 years old. And, the Lakers, they might be the most popular team on the planet. I mean, basketball is a global sport, and the Lakers are the team. And so to be that kind of player, to really be the truest heir of Michael Jordan, the closest we saw to somebody who played like Jordan, and somebody who really emulated Michael in a lot of ways, and his mannerisms on the court and how he carried himself, to win the five titles there and all the drama that came, it was Hollywood. It was a Hollywood story. Coming together with Shaq, breaking up with Shaq, on through all of it. And, Kobe to the Laker fan base is, it's funny. No one, they don't want to hear about the analytics and where he was, his efficiency, and some of the places where he might not compare as well with LeBron or maybe with Magic or whoever you want to compare him to, Michael. I think for Kobe especially, five titles was the thing he always held up, and he knew that still separated him from almost every other champion who played the game, and he really, really wanted that sixth title to catch Michael. Never got it.
Adrian Wojnarowski is joining us. It's so clear, and you did a great job of laying that out, Woj, but how he resonated with the Laker fans, but there's also a connection he had with the current generation of players. How would you describe the impact he's had on the players who are currently in the league?
Unlike any other player, Jim, and I was just talking to a general manager of a team today who was just telling me just his team was paralyzed. It was a team that played yesterday, and just how overwhelmed their group was. And I got a call right when we were getting the information on what had happened, and another GM whose star player he didn't think would be able to play, who did go out and play last night, and he, Kobe commanded a respect of young players, and I think especially in the last years he became more open toward the end of his career and then in retirement, bringing guys out to LA to work with him. He opened his arms up to be more of a teacher, and you saw Kyrie Irving who couldn't play in the Nets game yesterday. He was, we know he spent a lot of time with him, and Kawhi Leonard spent time with him, Jason Tatum in Boston, but he was the player's player. He, if you were a competitor and you went against him, or the young players coming up now who never played against him but wore his shoes and wanted to be him, I don't think there's another player quite like that. And that's not to take away from anybody else. Kobe, the whole Mamba mentality, there was a mystique and a mythology about Kobe that he knew how to really set it into motion with people, and his standing in the basketball community is, I just think, unlike anyone else's.
Well, I mean, to that point, not just basketball people, like you and I have talked about this in the past, and it came up in your conversation with Ramona Shelburne on your podcast yesterday. Kobe knew our business as well as anybody did, and how the business worked and how the narratives were formed. Where did that knowledge come from, and how much did you enjoy talking with him about that?
it was always a challenge. He always had great curiosity about our world and how we competed. I know this, and for your, you know, your listeners, and maybe some of your listeners are too young to remember Kobe at his height in L.A. There was nobody he respected, trusted more than Jim Rome. Nobody. And I used to, we would go down to, I remember a couple times Kobe took me down to Javier's in Newport Beach, and you'd go down and have dinner with him and talk. And then I'd hear that, like, you were down there with him, and I'm like, oh, man, Rome got another dinner with Kobe. Jeez, I wonder what he found out. And, you know, he was he really did understand how he could tell his story through the medium. And he was late to social media, and I used to tease him before he was on Twitter. And I really didn't want him to get on Twitter for my own selfish purposes, because I felt – the minute Kobe gets on social media, he's not going to need me as much anymore, or need right. any of us. And I would say, come on, Twitter is for small talk. You're a big proclamation guy. Don't stay. And he eventually got on and enjoyed, as you know, became a great storyteller in his own right. And but Kobe, I think part of that was being in L.A. and being in Hollywood. And I think he fell in love with that industry, and just had a great knack for being able to try and frame himself, not in context with the Lakers, with the league, in all of sports. And he's unlike anybody I've ever covered. And I tell people I owe a great deal of my career as an NBA reporter to Kobe, because he gave me credibility, because he was willing to trust me. He was willing to talk to me. And I don't think anything gave me more credibility in this realm than having that from Kobe, for Kobe Bryant. And I think a lot of others felt that way too. I think you felt that way 100%, at times too.
Yeah. 100%, Woj. 100%. I was going to say at the very end of that, me too. Me too, and I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. So finally then, it's such a challenging thing, because while you and I are both members of the media and we're supposed to be objective, at the same time, we have a personal connection. And I feel like you and I, we are members of the media. We're not supposed to mourn and grieve, but it's also hard. What was your first reaction when you heard that news yesterday? And how are you going to remember him ultimately?
Just shock. And my phone started, I was actually driving, and I was on the phone with a front office person talking about trade deadline stuff. And all of a sudden I got a text, and then I got another and another and another. And I was like, hey, I got to call you back. Something's happening here. And I pulled off the road, and I started to realize what had happened, or what may have happened. And it was, like anybody else, it was surreal. And then trying to get a confirmation on it, hoping against hope it was wrong and it wasn't true, and like everybody else. And then to find out it was, I mean, listen, I think Kobe was complex. His life was complex. His legacy will be in some ways, but I do think this about Kobe, that he always wanted to better himself, and I do think he bettered himself. We're all flawed, and Kobe was too, but I always felt Kobe was striving to be better, and I think he was. And again, it's part of the heartbreak of Gigi and what went on at the end. To imagine that ending and to think of those who have to live without them now. But I think he wanted to be and was. I think fatherhood gave him a great purpose in life, and it gave him great peace, and it made him want to be the best person he could be. And that's how I want to remember him. And I'm going to picture, for all the moments I witnessed with him and you witnessed with him, you know, I think about that scene in Brooklyn last month with Kobe and Gianna sitting courtside and him and her talking, presumably about something that was going on the court. I want to try to remember him in that way.
Adrian Wojnarowski is my guest. It's so true. He wanted to be the best father he could possibly be, and it was so clear
how crazy he was about his kids and the pride he had in them. And Woj, obviously, this is the last thing this is about is you or me, but I do want to say I know how much he thought of you. I know how much he liked you. I know how much he respected you. I know how much he respected how far you would come in the business. And it was no secret, and it was not a coincidence that he spent as much time talking about things in life with you. And that was very apparent to me. Woj, I really appreciate your thoughts on that, and I really appreciate the conversation. Like I said, I never thought that you and I would ever have a conversation like this, but I'm glad that you could spend some time with us today. Thank you.
Jim, it was an honor to be on, as always. We'll talk again soon, brother.
You know, Kobe has a long history with this program. And on just about every single show I've done for the past two decades, he was accessible, he was available, and he always showed up and always delivered. I mean, every single time. And again, this is somebody who did not have to do this. This is somebody who did not need the attention, somebody who did not need to fulfill more media obligations. Once he achieved legendary status, he could have just shut it down and only done the league minimum, the league required media, but that's not what he did. I go back to 2008. He came in studio on JRIB. Jim Rome is burning. First of all, the fact that Kobe came in studio was pretty amazing. Again, athletes do not do that. Not if they don't have to. If you can even get them to say yes, generally, it's like, all right, send the camera crew to me. And we do so. At least back then we did so because of the technology. But not Kobe. Kobe said, I'll come in. So what made it remarkable, aside from him deciding to come in, is that the studio itself was not remarkable. That was not exactly the lap of luxury. That was a warehouse across the parking lot from a sheet metal factory. It wasn't like some cool, luxurious building that you wanted to show off. In fact, in a way, I always wanted the presence of a star athlete to be there. I just didn't want them to see where we worked or what the building was like. Part of me was like, oh no. Mamba wants to come in. He's going to see the hood that I work in every single day. But he loved the process. He loved the whole thing. And that was not a building I wanted to show off. But he came down. And one of the things that we talked about that day, going back to 08, was his legacy.
If you thought about how this whole thing ends, when it's all said and done, the final chapter of your career, how you go out.
I've thought about it before. I love to be remembered as a guy that just loved to play the game, worked extremely hard at it, and won. You know, if people could say that about me, I'd be very happy.
Well, Kobe, we got you in studio. It took some doing, but good to finally have you here. I appreciate the visit. Thanks
man,
so much. Good luck
got
to
it,
you.
Man. Thank you.
So then he came back again. That was not the only time. He came back again when Derek Fisher filled in for me as host one day. Derek Fisher hosted the show while I was out. And then in 2010, Kobe came on the show the day after winning the title.
So much riding on it. So when you finally got to the finish line last night, were you feeling, how much of it was joy and how much of it was just relief? Like, the pressure's off. I got the win.
You know, it was both. But it was more joy, though. It was more joy. You know, this is a special group of guys. And I really enjoyed it because of that. Because, you know, it took a lot of intestinal, you know, inner fortitude for us to battle through this game, because, you know, we were all tired, we were all drained. Being down 13, to a team that executes so well and, hardly ever makes mistakes, it was tough. But we just felt so much joy because we were able to look each other in the eye and to a man say, no, we're going to get this done. You know, it looks ugly right now, looks bleak right now, but we're going to get this done. And the joy comes from guys banding together and making it happen.
How long do you give yourself to unplug before you think about anything basketball or business related?
That's a great question. It's tough for me to think about anything but basketball. That's just the way I've been since I was like five. So it's going to be tough to do. But now I'll take some time off physically and. You know, I got to look at my finger and, you know, see what the heck I'm going to do with this thing and kind of go from there.
In other words, you'll have breakfast and go get a lift in.
Pretty much.
It's Kobe on the show right after the championship. This is what I mean, right? He didn't have to do that. He also came on our Showtime show multiple times. He was always game for anything and everything, including talking dog bleep.
You once said, Kobe, and I quote, "I hate dog shit. I won't go near it. I've got four dogs. I just don't do dog do." Hey, listen, nobody likes dog shit, but what's your beef with dog do?
No, it's like a different kind of a beef, though. Like, for me, it's a psychological thing. I stepped in dog shit one time when I was young, and my grandparents had just sent me some fresh-to-death 1988 Jordans to Italy. And we can't get Jordans in Italy at that time. Couldn't get them. And so I'm out playing in the yard, whatever, and I step in some dog shit and just messed them up. I was, like, in the house trying to get them out in the bathroom, it's probably too much information, but you get the idea.
Oh, no, I do, man. Now I get it. How'd you recover from that, man? That is bad. That is really bad.
I don't think I fully have. I don't think I fully have. I won't pick up dog shit. It's like a traumatic event.
Kobe talking about dog poop on our Showtime show. We're talking about Dwight back in the day, which is what makes Dwight's return and desire to work with Kobe on the slam dunk contest this year even more amazing.
How would you characterize the 1 year you had with Dwight Howard? And if you're being totally honest, is there any part of you that's glad that he did not re-sign with the Lakers?
Well, we didn't see eye to eye. I mean, it wasn't going to work. It wasn't going to work. I mean, he has his perspective of how he wants to play, you know, how he views how championships should be won, and I have mine. And, you know, just there wasn't going to be a middle ground because of how different the point of views were.
Kobe talking about Dwight then, that's what makes it so unusual, that Dwight has figured it out. Dwight wanted to work with Kobe. Dwight finally got to it. And then I talked to Kobe about whether or not he would ever leave the Lakers.
You badly want another ring. We've been talking about this. Do you want it badly enough that you would ever leave the Lakers to get it?
No, I can't see myself going any place else. I mean, I was born a Laker. I mean, this is home for me. So, you know, I don't see myself going someplace else just to try to win another championship. You know, my attitude's always been it's going to happen here or it's not going to happen. It's just, you know, that's the way I've always viewed things.
This is part of the reason why Laker fans love Kobe, because he talked about his love for them and for the Lakers. Also, back in 2013, he came on the radio program, this show, and we talked about his approach and his diet.
34, but 17 years in, how old do you feel?
I feel good. I feel fine. You know, I don't feel like I've been playing 17 years. It kind of flew by. And, you know, physically, I don't have anything to really show for it outside of, the knee situation that is much, much better. Was much, much better in the last 2 years, so.
What about your regimen? I mean, are you changing the way you work out? Are you changing what you eat? You have to evolve. You can't do the same
diet,
things now that you did.
Diet thing.
Diet? Tell me about your diet.
Oh, my God. Like, I've had to scale back the diet and start eating a lot more healthy and kind of paying attention to what, you know, to my intake. That's been the hardest adjustment, actually.
What did you give up?
In-N-Out burgers. I've had to kind of scale back on that, unfortunately.
Dude, you got to be like me. I mean, and plus, if you have kids, you've got a pantry and you've got a bunch of crap in the pantry that you got to shop for the kids, right? They're not playing pro ball. I mean, walking by that thing's got to be hard.
Yeah, because the kids, you know, my kids, they love In-N-Out, as do I. So I've had to kind of go protein style when I do that. Or I've had, you know, like the sugar cookies that they love to eat. And I've had to have kind of, you know, cut back on that and, you know, eating too much red meat. You know, I had to do more fish and more veggies and, you know, all the stuff that your mom tells you to eat when you're a kid growing up. So
yeah, and it sucks.
That's Kobe a few months after the Achilles injury talking about his health. And that's something I haven't spent much time talking about today, the Achilles injury. There's so many defining moments from his career. The 81 against the Raptors, the 62 points in three quarters against the Mavericks. Remember, he outscored the entire Mavericks roster. 62-61 through three quarters, and then he sat out the fourth. The Game 7 alley-oop to Shaq. Remember that.
Portland has three timeouts left. The Lakers have two. Bryant to Shaq!
Not flinching when Matt Barnes faked that pass into his face, scoring 60 in his final game ever, dragging the Lakers across the finish line in Game 7 of 2010 against Boston. The five rings. But to me, the Achilles might be the most Kobe moment of all time. He tears his Achilles against Golden State in 2013. He needs to be helped to his feet. He pinches his calf. He goes to the free throw line to take the shots instead of coming out of the game. I mean, it was like the most Kobe thing ever. You could talk all you want about the Mamba mentality, but that was seeing it in action. This was Kobe on our radio program after turning 38.
I'm just very thankful being able to have this experience of playing this beautiful game of basketball and to be able to sit here now at 38 years old and having this conversation with you and being able to enjoy my kids growing up. It's been a fantastic ride.
Kobe, how's 38 feel?
Feels awesome, dude. I can't complain, man. I feel awesome. I have more hair on my face than I do on my head, but besides that, it's all good.
Did you notice that answer? Did you hear the enthusiasm about getting older, about being with his kids? It's so powerful. It is so unbelievably sad. And that answer feels so different today. And this is what I mean when I say he was just getting started. Kobe wasn't anywhere near done. He was done playing basketball in the NBA, but everything else was just getting started. And he was excited about it. And he was attacking it. So, clones, what do you want when you're craving protein or you need some more energy? Let me start by saying what you do not want. You do not want another bar or a sugar snack or an energy drink. No, what you want is beef. Let me help you with that. Beef, pure and simple. So where's the beef? It's in a package of Old Trapper beef jerky. Old Trapper is not your old man's jerky. Old Trapper beef jerky is made from lean strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a real wood fire. So it's tender and tasty, not rough. What makes it so good? I would suggest to you it's the 50-year-old family business behind Old Trapper. They're known for a relentless commitment to quality. They take smoked beef extremely seriously. You can taste it in every single bite. Old Trapper is packed with protein. It comes in four great flavors to satisfy all your cravings. Quality smoked meat at its finest that goes with you wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. If you don't see it, be sure to ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? Rudy Gobert is my guest. Rudy, it is so nice to have you on. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. You know, I want to talk about the amazing season you're having and how good your team is, but I need to start with the passing of Kobe Bryant. What was your reaction, Rudy, when you heard that terrible news yesterday?
It was a shock. You know, I think for all of us, we just found out right after practice and, you know, we couldn't believe it. You know, there was a big silence, and we was trying to figure out if the news were real, and you know, we found out a few minutes later that they were. So it was just a tough moment. You know, it makes you take everything into perspective. You know, but his legacy and the impact he had, we'd be there forever.
Rudy Gobert is joining us. In fact, in terms of perspective, you tweeted yesterday, quote, "Enjoy every single day, people. We are always too worried about things that are actually not that important. Life is precious. You never know when it's going to end," end quote. So personally, how are you going about processing all of this?
About what? Sorry.
How are you processing this? How are you handling this?
I mean, like I said, you know, it makes you think. It makes you think a lot, and I also lost one of my friends a week ago in a car accident. So it's like, you know, you see people, and all of a sudden the next day they're just not here anymore, and you know, and you can do everything right. You know, you can eat right, you can, you know, invest your money and do all these things, and you know, and have a car accident or have someone hitting you, or you know, you just never know in life. So it's, you know, it's all about enjoying, you know, the little things every day, and you know, and surround yourself with the people that, you know, make you better every day.
Such a great message. Rudy Gobert is joining us. So, Rudy, you're coming off a win over the Mavericks on Saturday where you had 22 points, 17 rebounds, and 5 blocks. You've had some really, really good games in your career. Where does that one rank, especially when you consider all the clutch moments that you had late in that game?
I really like the fact that, you know, we won the game. That's the main thing. You know, we didn't play our best game, but we stick together, and you know, we were able to make plays down the stretch defensively and offensively. I think it was one of our, you know, most exciting wins of this season, for sure.
Rudy, one of the moments was that block on DeLon Wright's layup in the final 30 seconds that really was incredible. It was unreal because even more than that, it was the buildup to the block because you made sure that Luka did not drive. Then you made sure that Wright didn't take a three, and then you recovered to reject the layup. So what was going through your head on that entire sequence, and then how good did it feel to hear the crowd respond the way they did, chanting your name and showing you all that love?
I mean, the mindset was ready to get a stop, you know, and we were down two, so it's not like, you know, we're down three and we just don't want to give up a three. We just didn't want them to score, and, you know, we knew that they were going to go to Luka, obviously, so trying to get the ball out of his hands and then, just see what they do and try to adapt. And, you know, I was able to make a play after getting beat off the dribble, and, you know, and then after that, we made a free throws and won the game. So it was it's kind of like our mindset, you know, is to not give up. And, you know, and when it matters, you know, which is at the, you know, the last minute and the last few minutes of the game, I feel like our awareness and our focus is really increased. And that's why we've been so good at the end of games.
We're talking to Rudy Gobert. Now, I know you're focused on winning, and you've been doing a whole lot of that lately, going 19-2, as I mentioned, in the last 21. But your teammates are reminding everybody that you belong in the All-Star game. Your coach, Quinn Snyder, said, when it comes to the All-Star game, quote, "To be honest, to me, it's one of those things that's just self-evident," end quote. I understand that you're not focused on that, but what would it mean to you to go to the All-Star game this year?
I mean, obviously, it would mean a lot, and, you know, just because it's something that, you know, when you play basketball and when you come into the league as a kid, it's one of the things that, you know, I told myself I wanted to be. I told myself I wanted to be one of the best players in this league, and I wanted to win championships, you know, and when we play the way we've been playing as a team, it's great to have guys that can, you know, represent our team in that kind of event, for sure.
Rudy Gobert joining me for a few more moments. You grew up roughly 90 minutes northeast of Paris. So what was life like for you growing up? You just touched on that, but what was it like growing up? And then what's it like now when you go home as an NBA star?
I mean, what was it like growing up? I mean, I really love, you know, where I grew up. I grew up with my mom and, you know, I very humble beginnings, but, you know, I think that's the reason I am who I am today. You know, I really, you know, enjoy every day as they come, and I really, you know, enjoy the little things like we talked about earlier. You know, it's all about giving everything you have for, you know, for the people around you, and you know, for me, that's why I'm so competitive. You know, I just enjoy going out there with my teammates and you know, and try to win, because it's, you know, it's really what makes you feel alive, you know, when you do those things.
Rudy Gobert, my guest. All right, final point then. To that point, you and the rest of the team have been rolling, and it seems like from the outside, I'm not there, of course, but from the outside looking in, it seems like there's something really unique or special about this group. How would you describe the chemistry of this team and what makes it special?
I mean, I think it's really like we really love each other. You know, outside the court, you can tell that, you know, we just enjoy being around each other, and you know, and we have guys that are just competitors, you know, guys that just want to win more than anything. And when you have that kind of mindset and everyone is willing, you know, to sacrifice a little bit for the others and to make the others better, it makes, you know, it just raises the team to another level, and with the great coaching staff and, you know, and the work that we've been able to put in every day, with a group of guys like that that care about winning, you know, you just feel like you're getting better and better every month, and that's pretty much what we've been doing this year.
I want to talk to you for a minute about Root Insurance. Like, what if good drivers did not have to pay for all the bad drivers? Root Insurance thinks that the old way of pricing car insurance is not right. It's not fair. So Root developed a mobile app which measures driving behavior. By removing bad drivers from the equation, Root saved good drivers up to 52% in 2019. So gone are the days where your car insurance rate is based on your credit score, your age, your gender, or your zip code.
With Root, it's car insurance made easy. Using an app to base rates primarily on how you drive. Better drivers deserve better rates, right? That's why the Root app uses driving behavior to determine car insurance rates. And in 2019, Root was the fastest growing direct insurance company in the United States. All you have to do is download the Root Insurance app, drive normally for a few weeks during the Root test drive, and then see how much you can save. Do not wait. Give it a try. Head to your app store, download the Root Insurance app, sign up in less than a minute, and start your test drive today. That's R-O-O-T. Again, download the Root app today or visit joinroot.com and learn more and see how much money you can save. Not available in all states. Disclaimers may apply. Visit joinroot.com for details. Mark in Hollywood. Morning, Mark. How are you?
Hey, man. Not doing great. But I appreciate you giving not only Kobe and his daughter the due respect, but also the other victims. I think that's important as well. I'm a Philly guy. I'm from Philly, as you know. I went to the high school next to Lower Merion and came out here. And, yeah, I'm one of those annoying Kobe stans. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a Kobe fan. I wasn't a Lakers fan. I was a Kobe guy. And, you know, I really got into the Lakers when Shaq left because I felt that was a good entry point. And I rode that wave for the two championships. I lost both of my parents in 2010, and that's when they beat the Celtics. And look, man, that helps, all right? Like, we're all sports fans here, right? We choose to suspend our disbelief and believe in people that, yeah, they're not the greatest people, and they're playing for money. We get it. We get it. But it makes you feel good. It makes you feel better when you just believe in something. And he made me believe in something. And one of the funniest things I thought about yesterday was, like, you know, the 4 years leading up to his retirement, I'm like, man, I don't know if this is going to go well for this guy, right? He's played in the NBA longer than he's been alive. Like, is he going to go the bitter route, like 45, but just worse, you know, dissing people at his Hall of Fame speech? But he was happy. Like, you know, like he's everywhere. Women's basketball, camps, like he is just so happy in retirement. Who would have seen that coming? Nobody. He always had this saying, he hated losing more than he loved winning. And I was talking to one of my boys, Joey, this morning, and Joey, he put it really poignantly. And he said, you know, I was never a Kobe guy. You know, all my teams were against him, but I hate losing him more than I loved having him. And I think that's something that it resonated with me. And, you know, it's sports. We get it. But sometimes it's more. So I appreciate you, brother. And I appreciate this platform that you're really taking responsibly. And I'm out.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it very much. Save that phone call, Alvin. Let's go to Arizona. Billy, it's good to have you on the show. Billy, how are you?
Good. How are you doing today?
Good.
So your last caller, I mean, he pretty much hit it on point there. So all I can really say is, you know, with this, you know, the father, three daughters, you know, just live life, love one another. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, just Kobe is one of those guys that, you know, it seemed like nothing could shake him. It just doesn't matter who you are. Life can just tragically end like that, you know. And I'm a Suns fan, so we, you know, we hated Kobe on the court, but then off the court, every one of us is, you know, we all pretended to be either two people, Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant, every time we took a little jump shot to throw in a piece of trash in the trash can. You know, we all Kobe. And it's, you know, it's just, it's a tragic day. And, you know, yesterday was tragic. It's tragic around all sports. I mean, you've seen it. And there was a moment yesterday in the Grammys I watched, and I don't know if everybody watched it. You're a father, Jim, so I think you should watch it. I cried, you know, thinking about my own kids, Kobe, and when Camila Cabello sang to her father last night, that was, man, it was a touching. And another thing is that the Grammys, I think last night was the best it's been in a long time. And it was, a lot of it stems from, you know, the tragic loss of Kobe. But like I said, all I can say is love one another, live life, even when your story's not done or just beginning, it could come to a tragic end.
I appreciate that, Billy. Thank you very much. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. Let's go to Arlington, Raider Mike. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Vince, Mac, thanks for taking the call. You know, it's got to be a difficult show for you today. Myself, Jim, I haven't been this shaken up making a phone call to you since I first did so almost 3 decades ago. Firstly, you mentioned it's just getting started in life. You know, I read a tweet from President Obama, and he spoke about this very same thing, how the second act in Kobe's life and how it was going to be so brilliant, and, you know, the curtain just coming down on it. And, you know, Bill Plaschke said it best. The city of Los Angeles had its heart ripped out yesterday. Godspeed to his family and those of the other victims. You know, but this guy, this dude, he was the king of L.A. And, you know, Vince Beck, you and I, we're both the same age. We both grew up in the same area. We've been Laker fans since Game 5 of the 1972 Lakers-Knicks Finals. That was shown on ABC's Wired World of Sports 100 years ago. As a Laker fan, what I knew personally, what I knew of Kobe Bryant, it wasn't this toughness or this Mamba mentality. It's the fact that outside of Michael Jordan, he was the greatest basketball player to ever lace them up. And, you know, people remember, from the mid-80s to like the early 90s, you know, there was this rumble line of young hotshot players who were glossed like, you know, the next Michael or baby Jordan. But Kobe was the real deal. Those other guys, they buckled under the pressure. Kobe embraced it. And he wasn't as flashy, and he certainly is not as good defensively as Jordan. But he is a mirror image of the guy, and that's his legacy. See on the court. And Jim, real quick, lost in all this is Jerry West. You know, back in the summer of 96, all us Laker fans, we knew we were getting Shaq. The problem was, what were we going to do with Vlade Divac? You know, Mr. West saw something in this young teenager that nobody else did. In fact, Kobe was only the second high school player to ever come out after Garnett. And I remember in his rookie season, Jim, there used to be a caller to your show, Jay in L.A. He'd get into these Laker practices, and he'd be raving about this young kid named Kobe Bryant. But, you know, overall, my personal memory, Jim, will always be Kobe walking off the floor in the closing seconds of Game 7 in the 2000 NBA Finals against the Pacers. He's walking off, looking up at the crowd in Staples Center, and he's pointing at his ring finger. That's all I got, Jim.
Thank you, Mike, very much. Raider Mike in Arlington. Quickly, we go to Crescent City. Trapper, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. He could be a lot better without this, but I've been a Celtic fan all my life. So you can consider this a call from Celtic Nation to Laker Nation. I can't tell you how many times Kobe Bryant broke our hearts, but I can tell you, Jim, it was one more time yesterday. They talk about resting in peace. I don't know about that. I do know he's going to be giving Hondo and the rest of the boys up their fits. To Laker fans from Celtic Nation, deepest condolence for all of our loss yesterday. That's all I got, Jimmy. And it was an honor to follow my brother, Mike. Tramps like us, babe. I'm out.
Thank you, Trapper. Silk. Hi, Silk. How are you?
Man, this is tough, bruh. My wife and I stayed home for a few hours watching the coverage and stuff, but after a while we just had to get out, and something we would do on a Sunday anyway. So we went down to Main Street. There's a little wine spot that we go to, and like the whole street, dude, you could just tell like it was hushed. It wasn't a normal Sunday. Every bar, restaurant had the coverage on. People were just, I mean, there was like a pallor over the city, dude. And, Kobe was an LA Laker, and you know, he played in Los Angeles, but for those of us in Orange County, you know, he lived here. You know, his wife went to high school in Huntington. I think he wanted to settle down here to be close to that part of the family. And, you know, for those of us that live in Orange County's big, but the beach communities are pretty small. So, you know, it's not like sometimes you're shocked to run into somebody. Like, you expected to see Kobe out. We were shocked if you didn't see him out. It's just really weird, man. my friend who works for Morton's, who took care of your family, she texted us yesterday. And she says, you're not going to believe this. Kobe has a reservation for here on Monday for like an event. And she was just staring at her reservation screen yesterday and just could not believe it, just seeing Kobe's name there and that she wouldn't be there and see him when he came in. It's just been really tough, man. And I cut my teeth with the Showtime Lakers as a kid, my Wonder Years, and Kareem was always my guy, and Magic, of course. And we had those lean years and with some fun players, too, like Eddie Jones and Anthony Peeler and Nick Van Exel. But before players started using their leverage to move and force trades and chasing rings, Kobe was a student of basketball history. He always wanted to be a Laker. He didn't want to be a 76er. You know, he could tell you what Elgin Baylor and averaged for his playoff career. He always wanted to be a Laker. He didn't want to leave. He wanted to end his career. He knew that the Lakers, Celtics, of course, and Bulls, but were top of the food chain, and he wanted to be here. That's why I love Kobe so much, because growing up, it was about the players that played for their teams forever. It was about the Lakers, not necessarily individuals. So that was tough. And I just got a quick story, man. Years ago, my wife and I decided to kill some time on a summer afternoon and went over to the putt-putt at Boomer's on the 405 in Magnolia, and we're about to tee off, and who walks up? Kobe, Vanessa, Natalia, and Gianna. And we literally played nine holes where they're in front of us. And, you know, I didn't bug them. I didn't say anything, you know. So we're just sitting there, and we get to the schoolhouse hole, that little stupid door that goes up and down, and all the girls hit first, and first shot, they all go in. My wife and I are sitting on that stupid little aluminum bench, and I'm like, you know, I'm 2 feet from Kobe. He took like four hits, and it kept bouncing off the door. And you could see him getting frustrated, dude. And the girls had already walked down to go see if their balls went in the hole. He would not leave until he got it in. And that putter looked like a toothpick in his hand. So he finally gets it in, and I hadn't said anything to him. This is like five holes in. I just go, hey, Kobe, you got any advice on how to play this hole? And he looked at me, and he had that little smirk when his demeanor cracks and he gets that little sense of humor. And he looked at me and he goes, yeah, just go up and throw it in, dude. And it was unbelievable, man. That's my brush with Kobe. And, you know, we'd see him out a lot, Rob, but it's a tough day. Also, shout out to the Altobelli family. Dude, I don't know anyone who doesn't have a kid or they themselves spent at least a few semesters at OCC or Golden West. And that's a tough hit for the Orange County Costa Mesa baseball family, bro. So RIP to all those involved. And I'm glad you're doing this, bro. I'll talk to you later, bro.
It's a really good job by you, Silk. Really good job by you. Thank you. One of my favorite guys. I consider him a very good friend. He is Chris McGee. Chris, it is great to have you on the show. How are you?
Romy, I just want to say before we dive in, I love talking to you. I hate the circumstances. You've been amazing today. You and I texted during a break. You know, those first 15 minutes, I think I needed. You can probably hear the lump in my throat. I got a little emotional. I thought Silk Bra was unbelievable right there. He kind of summed it up for all of us that have lived in SoCal and were fans through the Showtime era. And it's been amazing, man. You've been a voice for a lot of us for so many years. You know, I was a fan way before I was a friend. So thanks for what you're doing today. And Kobe loved you, man. He really did. And he always brought it on your show. And I know you hit on that earlier.
You know, I really appreciate you saying that. It's hard. You know, like, I know this is a really difficult time, but I appreciate, Chris, you coming on. I mentioned earlier when I was talking to Woj, because we're members of the media and we're supposed to be objective and try not to mourn this thing or grieve. But at the same time, I mean, it's really personal. And you knew Kobe so well and spent so much time with him. What was your reaction when you first heard this terrible news?
Oh, Jim, it was so tough. You know, ironically, on Saturday after the Philly game, when we finished our show, I was telling Big Game James and Allie Clifton, who works with me as well, we were leaving the studio, and I'm like, oh, man, I get 2 days off in a row. I am so stoked. And for the first time, and so long, I have no volleyball with the kids tomorrow. I have nothing. I'm going to sit on that couch, and literally that's what I was doing. Jim and Big Game James called, and it was weird that he called. So I picked up the phone, and I hadn't been looking at my phone, so I didn't know I already had 45 texts, and my boss had already texted saying, this is not a drill, get in. And Big Game just simply said, tell me this isn't true, Geeter. And I said, what? He's like, well, TMZ's reporting Kobe's helicopter crash, and he was in it, and he's dead. So we kind of stayed on the phone together until we found out it was real. You know, I broke down in front of my wife, Jess, my daughter, Millie, for a moment. And then I got in the shower, Jimmy, and I got to work. and like you've had to do in your career, you can't practice for days like this. You get in there, and I was thrown immediately into the news. You know, we have a Spectrum News One channel. They did an amazing job. And I wasn't prepping at all, Jim. I was just on as more of a guest, kind of helped carry the load for 30 minutes. And then my boss came and got me, ran me right into the studio, and Rob Ori was there, and Allie, and James was on his way, and we went on for 4 hours.
Wow.
Jim, it was crazy. It's one of those things that it's hard to explain because you're trying to hold it together so much on air. Every little break you have, you're quiet and trying to figure it all out and just trying to breathe, because you've been in those situations, I'm sure, Jimmy, where you don't know what's coming. The producer is in your ear telling you what's coming. You don't know. You're flying solo. So there's a, you know, and I'm emotional on a lot of levels. I'm so glad you opened the show mentioning the other families. And, you know, we're all connected some way because we've lived in this town so long. And, you know, Logan and Jake go play baseball. You know, you have a connection with these people. And, you know, they're heroes and legends to their family and friends, Jim. So, you know, I just hurt on a lot of levels, man. And being a father, it's really tough because I have that relationship with my daughters when it comes to volleyball and basketball. So.
Chris McGee joining us. That was so well said. That was so well said. You know, I could talk to you about so many different things about Kobe. You mentioned big game, James, then you got Robert Ori. Robert Ori told the story yesterday about how he had heard about this young kid named Kobe before he arrived with the Lakers, but he wasn't sure about the hype. And then in practice, he tried to set a screen on him. What happened then, for those who do not know the story, Chris?
Oh, Kobe went right into him and tried to lay Rob out.
Right.
Rob's like, who are you? I have two championships. And Kobe's like, you're in my way. Like, Kobe wanted to be the absolute best. I don't know if you heard Rob tell the story yesterday about they would always play a three-point shooting game knockout, Bishaw, Fox, and Ori. And Kobe's like 18 and wants to play. And they're like, nah, young fella, you can't play. So finally he plays, and he's like using all his legs on the jump shot. And he's losing. And Rob said, like, for the next 2 weeks, I'd get in early, and this guy would have already put up 1,000 threes just so he could play with us. Hmm. I mean, he was that kind of guy. You know, Big Game told an awesome story yesterday, Jim, that I thought was so interesting. Year 19, Big Game is helping Byron on practice days. It's 9:15 at night, 9:30 at night. He gets a call. Much like when you said to Kobe, let's go to the steakhouse, and he said, no, I got to go get a workout. You know, Big Game gets a call from Gary Vitti that Kobe wants to meet him at 9 a.m. the next day and go over some footwork. And Big Game's going, Kobe has 33,000 points. What footwork am I going to teach him? Huh. You know, it's just those kind of stories. And then just 2 months ago, he called Big Game James and asked him about what drills the guards did at the University of North Carolina under Dean Smith.
It's insane.
He wanted to teach them to his girls. How incredible is that, Romy?
That is insane. Chris McGee is joining us. It's absolutely insane. Like, how many people, and you played sports at a high level for a long time, you have covered some of the best athletes in the world for a long time, how many people have you seen who had that same competitive fire, or even one similar to Kobe in terms of drive and fire and grit and work ethic?
I mean, Romy, there are none unless they're considered the greatest of all time. Like in the sport of volleyball, you know, like Kerry Walsh Jennings is like that, Misty May. And in the sport of basketball, it's MJ and it's Kobe and it's LeBron. It's Tom Brady in football. I mean, it's Tiger Woods in golf. I mean, you're talking about the GOATs, and I know we throw that word around a lot, but he had the drive. He had the work ethic. And Jimmy, you've been in SoCal your whole life. You know, you grew up in Calabasas where the plane crashed. Like, listen, in L.A., man, like, we love our heroes and our legends, but it's got to be earned, and I'm sure it's like that in New York and other cities as well, but, like, it's not just the charisma, the looks, the talent, the drive. You got to deliver on the stage, and the triumphs and the failures, like, Kobe did all of it with us. Like, I'm telling you, Silk said it too, like, he was ours, Jim. Like, that's the thing. He came at 17, and he left dropping 60 at 38. Think about that.
Geeter, Chris McGee is joining us. Now, Chris, as much as he had that fire, he had a different side that not everybody knew. He was the first to visit Lamar Odom, the first teammate, when Odom was in the hospital. You and your daughters were at a game in March of 2016, shortly before his last game. When he was warming up, he had your daughter Millie throw him a bounce pass.
Yeah.
What do you remember about that, and what does that moment mean to you and your family?
Thank you so much for bringing that up. And it's funny because my kids were, you know, they were young, but they knew Kobe. They knew the Lakers. They knew what daddy did.
And I got a day off. It was the Knicks game, and it was a national game. So my boss said, why don't you take the family? And I'll never forget taking them down to the floor, and they had their Kobe shirts on. And Kobe was at the free throw line, Jim. And he kind of saw me under the basket, and I think he took a second like, oh, Geeter's under the basket. He's not working today. And he saw Millie with me, and Luca was small, so she was in Jess's arms, like behind us. And it was Millie standing with holding my hand. And he threw the ball to her, and she gave him a bounce pass. And he shot his free throw and made it. And he gave me a look like, I did that because that's your girl. And fast forward a couple months, Jim, the final game, Kobe dropped 60. We do a two-hour post-game show on the floor. It's like the Lakers won an NBA final. That's how we treated it. And he comes out, and all the media members are just out on the floor. And he goes to each media member, and he hugs them and has a moment, which is incredible if you really think about it. And he comes to me. And we hug, and he says, we've come a long way since Beijing, because that's where we met at the Olympics in Beijing. He remembered that, and I just hugged him, Jim, and I said, thank you for that day that you had my daughter throw you the bounce pass. You'll never know what that meant to me. So I at least got to tell him, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I know exactly what you mean, and my biggest takeaway from that, Geeter, is he knew what it meant. Like, he knew. Innately, he knew. And he knew that Millie had that assist and will always have that assist, like the greatest assist. So if you had that moment with him, what was your last interview with him like?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I posted a couple pictures on Instagram today, and one is him hugging me after that 60-point game. He came by and hugged Rob and James and me, and I was thinking. And then the next photo is my last conversation with him. And Andy Bernstein, the longtime NBA photographer, took the photo. And it's me and Kobe walking down the hallway at the Laker facility. We had just gotten done with our 30-minute sit-down. It was 2017, Jim, and we were doing it because we were about to retire both his jerseys. So I got a half-hour sit-down with him. And you know how valuable those are, Jim. You've interviewed him, you know, more than most. And we were walking down that hallway, and the picture that Andy took, Romy, and I put it on Instagram today because it means so much to me. We were literally talking about our girls in volleyball at that time because his oldest was playing volleyball, Natalia. So it was just a trip, man. It was, you know, to have those kind of memories, those lasting memories, and really had not had a chance to talk to him, Jim, too much after that. Just saw him at a game once with Shaq's retirement and, you know, just a statue and, you know, gave him a wave and a hi and a hug. And that was it, man. I didn't have those last moments that I feel like we're getting robbed of.
I know it. Chris McGee, my guest. So finally, Chris, what's your sense? You work with the team closely. What's your sense as to how the current Laker players are feeling and reacting right now and processing it?
You know, Jim, Mike Bresnahan, who works with me, was on that plane. And, you know, I asked him yesterday on air, and of course we talked after, you know, listen, I don't need intimate details and people's names, but what was it like? And he said it was like nothing you could imagine. I mean, from LeBron to Jared Dudley to anyone on that team to Dwight, everyone waking each other up from a nap and just the plane, just, you know, everyone devastated and emotional. And no practice today. And tomorrow's going to be emotional as well, Jim. They're going to send us down to Staples. We're going to do that pregame show. And in the postgame show, I'm going to be that guy in the locker room. And it's going to be the first time I think all those guys talk. And I think for the first time, at least in a long time, that Clipper game to me is meaningless, to be honest with you, Jimmy.
Absolutely.
It's going to be about Kobe and hearing LeBron and those guys talk about him. I just they're having a hard time. You know, Jim, to jump in real quick, too, about just someone asked me yesterday what his legacy was. And I'm like, listen, his legacy, go on Instagram, go on Twitter, and read from every hero of yours. It's two grown men trying to meet in Temecula to fight over Kobe. You know, it's everyone's talking about crumpling up the paper and throwing it in a trash can when you were a kid, when you're walking by at the office or at school. You say Kobe. You know, it's our friend Lee Jenkins had a great quote that I found today. Jim, he wrote an essay for us before Kobe's last game that went on our pregame show. I still to this day think it's a big reason why we won an Emmy, because Lee was that good. And it says, he was all things, the number 8 and 24, the loopy grin and the jetted jaw, the gentle afro and the shaved head, the nights in Boston when everybody watched, and the dawns in Newport when nobody did. That's Kobe Bryant. He was ours, Jim, and he was all those things, you know?
Nobody better than Lee Jenkins. Chris McGee,
no doubt.
Studio anchor and a host for Spectrum Sportsnet, a panelist on the Daily TV show back in the day, and as I mentioned, one of my favorite people and a very, very good friend. Geeter, I'm definitely sorry for the loss. I know that you and he were very close, but I appreciate your thoughts today. That definitely helps, I think, all of us, and really nice to have you on the show, Chris. Thanks so much.
Jim, just want to say thanks for being a mentor and for being a friend and always being there for us. You're the best, man, and I really, really do appreciate you. All right, brother?
Good night now!